Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q1 FY24 earnings conference call of Pearl Global Industries Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Pallab Banerjee. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Hi, good morning everyone, and I welcome you all to our Quarter One Financial Year 2024 earnings conference call. Along with me on the call, we have Group CFO, Mr. Sanjay Gandhi, and SGA, our investor relations advisors. I hope all of you have gone through the investor presentation uploaded on the exchange and our company website. So the global macro environment is sluggish and continues to remain a challenge. Although the excess inventory situation of the big U.S. brands and retailers is coming to an end, their sales numbers continue to be conservative. And PGIL sales have risen marginally for this quarter. Order booking looks positive as the retailers prepare for the upcoming seasons. Our next few months' sales is conservative. This is mainly because the global retailers continued their efforts to reduce their excess inventory. Global retailers witnessed a decline in their excess inventory during the Quarter One of 2023 and expect the inventory position to further reduce significantly by this year of current year of 2023. As an example, Gap Inc. saw an inventory decline of 27% year-on-year in the latest quarter and expects the inventory to be balanced significantly as compared to the financial year 2022. Large retailers like Walmart, Target, Costco have also lowered and controlled their inventory much better this year. This means order books for the industry will be close to normal going forward. So as you know, with the backdrop of China Plus One strategy, it's increasing its market share along with other companies. There is a high likelihood of India signing a trade agreement with Europe and the U.K., while already benefiting from the India-Australia EPA. We maintain a confident outlook on the continued growth and traction of Indian exports in the medium to long term. The Indian government is actually working to is actively working to promote the growth and development of the country's textile sector, implementing a range of effective and meaningful schemes over the years. Amidst the challenging economic landscape marked by inflationary pressures and macroeconomic hurdles on the global scale, we are rapidly emerging as the preferred choice within the ecosystem of our esteemed global clientele. This can be attributed to our distinguished global competitive advantage, which positions us on par with our global peers. Our multinational presence, diverse portfolio of our product, robust design teams, strong parentage with a professional team, and exceptional customer relationship collectively establish our strong global standing, thus making us a preferred vendor among our customers. Our company has successfully expanded its reach to various regions worldwide, with a notable presence of 23 manufacturing facilities situated across five different countries. There are four big supply chains, as I have mentioned in my earlier calls. These include Southeast Asia, South Asia, Mediterranean region, and the Central America. Most of our customers and the big global retailers do source from all of these locations. Pearl Global has been running its manufacturing plants in two of these supply chains, namely the Southeast Asia. Our plants are in Indonesia and Vietnam, and in South Asia, where we are having our operations in India and Bangladesh. Now, in COVID-19 pandemic did expose the vulnerabilities for the long transits from Asian and African countries as a sourcing base for markets like US. And this has prompted US retailers to prioritize sourcing from nearshore countries. This year, most of them have been in lookout for capabilities and capacities that emphasize speed and inventory control. I am happy to announce that Pearl has started a manufacturing in Central America, that is the third supply chain that we speak about, via a strategic expansion in Guatemala. Pearl is now fully equipped for this need of the US retailers and will continue to add advantage to our customers. Pearl Global has acquired a 55% equity stake in Pearl Guatemala Holdco Limited. The existing factory, earlier owned by a Guatemalan resident and a US resident, and was generating an annual revenue of $3.8 million. It was operating 3 production lines. Post this acquisition, Pearl GT Holdco Limited will incur a capex of up to $2 million in the subsidiary to expand the capacities up to 12 lines, and which shall generate an annual revenue of $20 million by manufacturing for our prestigious customers. With its stable business environment and membership in the Central America Free Trade Agreement, Guatemala allows us to tap into the duty-free benefits, standing out as one of the most stable environments in the nearshore region. Having established relationships with our clients for over the last 2 decades, approximately 60% of our revenues are contributed by clients who have trusted Pearl as their apparel manufacturer for over 10 years, indicating our focus on delivering the best results for our clients at the best cost, quality, and minimal lead times. These strategic partnerships continue to prosper as we grow while on board new customers. Last year, around 70% of our revenue was from US, while the rest had rest of the contributions came from Europeans, English, Japanese, and Australian retailers. The share of our non-US business is on the rise this year. As I mentioned before, our business revenue in the next quarters continues to be tight. However, we do maintain our focus for the year to be flat or slight growth. Our primary objective is to reach higher levels of success by surpassing previous revenue growth records, which will positively impact our bottom line. This will be accomplished through various means, such as introducing new product categories, strengthening our existing customer relationships, and to increase the wallet share. Customers' wallet share, attracting new customers and assembling a resilient, agile, and creative team dedicated to the realizing of Pearl Global's vision. With this, I hand over this call to Mr. Sanjay Gandhi, our Group CFO, to run you down with some of the financials of Q1 Financial Year 24. Over to Sanjay.
Thank you, Sanjay. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our earnings call for Q1 FY24. Coming to the financial and operating performance of the company, on a consolidated basis, total income for Q1 FY24 increased by 5% year-on-year to Rs. 894 crores. EBITDA for Q1 FY24 expanded by 140 basis points year-on-year to 9.3% from 7.9% in Q1 FY23. PAT for the quarter stood at 47.4 crore versus a profit of 36.4 crore in Q1 FY23. Partnership factory contribution to the overall revenue stood at 16% for Q1 FY24. Revenue for this quarter increased on account of higher realizations per unit and improved capacity utilization level as we continue to gain traction from existing customers. Margin expanded because of an improved product mix and improved profitability from our overseas operations and on account of operating leverage kicking in. Despite the sluggish macroeconomic environment for our business, we continue to remain confident on our long-term goal of achieving a target revenue CAGR of 15 to 20% over the next 3 to 4 years. With strategic allocation of capital, efficient cash flow management, and robust internal control, we are confident of delivering the best results to not only our clients, but also our stakeholders. With this, I would like to open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our first question is from the line of Keshav from Rakshan Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Congrats for a very good performance this quarter. Firstly, sir, year on year, there's a near 20% volume correction, but the ASPs have gone up to make up for it. So can you help understand what's driving this ASP growth and how sustainable is it?
So, yes, if you see, like we do declare the results in two formats. One is the India standalone, and then the consolidated result. So I think what you're asking for is that India, there's a decline in the number, but overall the number has gone up, correct? So
right.
What has happened is we had last year, when the demands were high, we had taken certain orders in India, which were supposed to be, in the long term, should be produced in countries like Bangladesh. So very cost competitive and bulk orders, which are much more Bangladesh friendly compared to India. So this year we didn't have that pressure. So we had capacities in Bangladesh where our efficiency and everything went up. So those orders were shifted back to Bangladesh for this year. So that extra pressure that we had in India is not there this particular year. And the second is that we had also undertaken another plant of ours in India to do some renovation. So that's why, we had operated one plant less in India, a smaller plant. So there are two things that contributed to be a lesser revenue in India portion, and overall our business, that means from the customer wallet share, it did not decrease. So in fact, it increased, and we shifted the place of production, manufacturing, looking at where the best benefit could be achieved.
And so secondly, throw a bit more light on how the demand scenario might affect us. So the global textile demand is just seeing some of the other headwinds for a while, and any projections are getting difficult to understand. But slowdown is being seen now in multiple industries. So what we said about conservative growth for the next few months, taking that into account and whatever visibility we have with our clients, do we still expect to do a 10 to 15% PAT growth this year?
So, Sanjay, I can take that. So, in terms of the overall revenue number, that we are projecting to be similar to last year or maybe a minor growth. So that's what we have been forecasting, and we still stand to that forecast. In terms of PAT, or the PBT bar portion. So we have been working on that to as our the scalability of our factories and the efficiencies that we have been achieving in some of our factories, that is generating that extra benefit. So that's something, and plus other disciplines of financial management is giving us the growth in our PBT and PAT. So that, again, like whatever forecast that we have been talking about, that we will maintain.
Understood, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, then we can move on to the next.
Yes, sir. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Pulkit Singhal from Dalmus Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity and congrats on a very good set of numbers. First question is just to understand a bit more on the seasonality aspect of the business. If my understanding is correct, second half typically in a financial year is better for you in terms of revenue than the first half. Is my understanding correct in a normal year?
Depends on the region. So yes, for the India region, definitely it is the second half gets better.
I mean, from a consolidated basis, but when you look at the consolidated revenue.
Yeah, to a certain extent, yes. Overall,
so that's what we called out in the last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, in that context, and given that second half of last year was also a very soft base for you, where you were clocking 700 crores out of revenue. And lastly, given that, you know, even one of the competitors has called out that second half will be much better, you can already see that in the order book in terms of growth rate and given your opening commentary as well. Given that you've delivered already 5% revenue growth in 1Q, which was the most challenging quarter, why would the full year be anything short of double-digit revenue growth?
I would say that what I'm seeing at this point of time from the US market is still has not kicked in the growth that we are talking about or we are expecting. Most of the retailers have been balancing out their excess inventory. So that part is becoming better. But so far, still they're very conservative in terms of their buying. So yes, we continue to project that there will be a growth, but may not be a big amount of growth. So that's why we have been saying that, okay, it will be flat to a little growth. What we're seeing is that maybe like, you know, for us, the Q1 revenue has been good. Q2 overall revenue again soft or similar to last year. But then from Q3 and Q4, we will see a little bit more bouncing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, Q3 and Q4, because your current order book would be for Q3, if my understanding is correct already. Have you filled up your Q3 revenues? I mean, your order book?
Yes. Yes. So you see, like, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, no, if you look at the full year, so from that, we are still positive. We will be definitely showing some growth. But to what extent? I would like to go conservative because of what I'm seeing in the current market scenario. So I'm not over-related to say that, okay, we should be having a double-digit growth and all as of now. But as the number comes in, as the number picks up, definitely we'll keep the market informed.
Thank you. And secondly, if you could just call out, what was the forex loss for the quarter in the other expense?
So, let me just explain. So, the forex gain loss is actually, this is always the translation loss. We have the accounts which are maintained in Vietnam currency, Bangladesh currency, and then they get translated into the Hong Kong, in Hong Kong in US dollar, and then US dollar to INR finally. So, there are multi-layer of consolidation. So, it's all unrealized currency translation loss, which is on the balance sheet item which is sitting. That really is there. Otherwise, on a currency basis, we don't have any situation for loss as such.
Right, but you account for that in other expenses, my understanding,
right? Yes, right. So there is a hedge accounting principle which is supposed to be followed. It goes in 2-3 heads. You know, if you look at, I just give, for the sake of time, I'll give a 3 components. Some part of it goes and gets clubbed with the sales. As long as the hedge contract, what you take is linked to the sales contract. There is certain portion which goes to other expense, and there is some portion which goes to OCI. So depending upon the nature of the forex gain or loss, it gets categorized accordingly.
And because last year there was a huge loss sitting for the full year in the other expense. And I'm just wondering, what is the repeatability of that expense from an annual basis, let alone from a quarterly basis, But if I look at things annually, this year, next year, etc., so do you expect that quantum of loss to continue?
I don't think there will be any loss given the fact that, you know, the currency is depreciating overall. As I mentioned that, you know, the loss which arises is on account of the currency translation because of the multi-layer currency which we operate and multi-layer consolidation which takes place on the balance sheet item. On the P&L side, on the real transaction basis, there has never been a loss because we have a currency which is depreciating and we all our revenues are denominated in US dollars.
And I'll try to take this a bit offline, but thank you for answering my question.
Sure.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Vignesh Iyer from Sequent Investments. Please go ahead.
Congratulations, sir, on a very strong set of numbers in a difficult environment. And thank you for the opportunity. Sir, I was going through your geographical, split that you gave in segmental. So what I observed is last two quarters, Bangladesh was in around 10% PBIT margins, and now it has come back to its 5-6% margin, whereas Hong Kong and Vietnam are seeing significant growth and profitability. Is there a seasonality to this specific geography running the business, or we are seeing a more consistent level of margins from here on?
So I just like to mention that you are referring to the segment result. In segment result, there are a lot of intercompany elimination which takes place, and it varies quarter on quarter basis. So that may not be a true reflection of the profitability which is there in that particular country. Reason being that, there is some invoicing which we have to do from Pearl Global Hong Kong, and then Pearl Global Hong Kong and the respective country will have the intercompany elimination there. In some quarter it may be more, some quarter it may be less, and it varies from the customer to customer basis. So that may not be too reflective of, what the profitability is there to compare on a quarter on quarter basis. So it's a bit longest concept to explain in terms of the segmental reporting. I can take up your question, later in detail if you would like to understand a little more about how does the overall revenue transactions of the Pearl is structured for a better understanding and appreciation of the segmental accounting.
Okay. I will contact you post this call to understand it. So, but just to understand, is this every geography a profit center in itself, or it is more about profitability at a company level?
So we have a profit center for every geography. Like Bangladesh is a different profit center and a separate legal entity which operates in there. There is a Vietnam is separate, Indonesia is separate, and India is separate. So every country is a separate profit center, and the tracking and MIS and management information and evaluation of those countries happen on that basis only.
Yeah, but they don't invoice between geographies on cost value, right? It is invoiced at market value only, right? I mean, to ensure that geography is making the profit as if it is selling in the open market.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned there is some technicality around that, about the intercompany and then, customer requirements also comes into play. And that all this combination is put together. And of course, as you rightly mentioned, there are transfer pricing regulations which require a compliances and that are adhered to. And thereafter, this entire transition is given effect. So for better understanding, I think it will require a little more on discussion about, how the transaction structure is there given the particular requirements of the customer. And therefore, looking at the segmental result, it may not be clear indicative of the profit potential of that geography itself.
Okay, I'll probably contact the IR and, test it up or something. Okay, so second question is just to understand what would be our tax rate for this year at consolidated level?
So effective tax rate, given, so that's another point which is pertinent to the first question also, which I wanted to elaborate, later. But I just give you the effective tax rate percentage, which is on a consolidated basis for us, given that Vietnam has a different tax slab, which is into lower tax regime. And then, there is a separate taxation rate in Hong Kong, Bangladesh, Indonesia and India. The blended rate changes as per the profit percentage which is accruing in the different countries. However, we feel that 16 to 18% is something which should be the effective rate for the company as a whole. In some years, it may change depending upon how much the profit is flying in overseas, but on an average basis, when we look at it, when we prepare our budget and forecast, the blended rate comes to around 16 to 18%.
Okay, understood. So one last question, our Guatemala facility, it is, when would the CAPEX start and expected to, have a full facility ready for production?
Hello, would you like to take this?
So, this investment has started already. So we are, at this point of time, in process of expanding the lines. We will do it in phases. And as our clients, like the bigger clients, would be placing the order. In fact, the first order has already started manufacturing there, as I speak. So this will see that growth, both in terms of the capacity, and that's how the CapEx has been planned over this 1 year.
If you could just give a timeline to this phases, if possible, quarter-wise. Rough figure, rough number will do, about the quarter.
You're asking about the CAPEX amount?
Yeah, the two CAPEX
amount,
the two phase-wise, when it will be spent. Just to get an idea.
Yeah, sure. So this year, when we are talking in August 2023, I think by the end of March 2024, we would have incurred at least 25% of the CAPEX on this facility. And going into next year, FY 2024-25, we expect by within 6 months of next financial year, with quarter one and quarter two, as the facility scale up, we'll be starting incurring, and I think completion should happen around quarter two or quarter three of next financial year. It's all about how quickly and how faster the facility or the existing phase wise CAPEX start generating the return which we are looking at it as, and it can be accelerated also depending upon the traction which comes from the customer. It's all in our hands in that sense.
Oh, okay. Thank you, sir. That's all from your side. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Narendra from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a good set of...
Sorry to interrupt. Mr. Narendra, may we request you to use your handset, please?
Yeah, is it better now?
No, sir. You're not audible, sir.
Yes, please.
Hello? Yeah, am I audible?
Yes, sir. This is better. You can go ahead.
Yeah, so my first question would be regarding the situation in the overseas market. So when is it expected to normalize? Like you have a medium-term revenue guidance of 50 to 20%. So when could we see that coming up?
So situation across the globe is conservative at this point of time. But if I have to break it down region-wise, till last year, the markets like Europe, Japan, Australia were much, much more conservative compared to US. So US was really very, very highly charged and they were really in high demand. And because of that happened because of the logistical delay that was happening in 2021. So that resulted in excess demand from US. And we saw a lot of high demand situation. Whereas the other countries, other regions, that means your UK or Europe, continued to be conservative. They were just starting the war, so definitely they were very, very conservative at that point of time. Even Australia and Japan, post-pandemic, have been conservative in the whole period of 2022, if I have to look back. What I'm seeing now is that these other markets are normalized. They are like Australia or Japan, Europe and UK. So they are much more normal at this point of time, whereas US landed up with a huge amount of extra inventory because they were so bullish in 2000, 21-22 period, so when they placed so much of business and then the market became slow for them and the goods arrived. So that generated extraordinary, you know, I would say negative demand in for the US. So there, most of the retailers were buying almost like 30-35% less compared to what they would buy. Even like some are even more than that. So for them to come back to normalcy, we expected that from spring to summer season, they should be coming back into normalcy. But you see, like what is happening is that they have two things. One, extra inventory, that excess inventory that they were carrying. And second, the market continues to be slow. So those markets have yet started buying aggressively or buying, I would say, not 100% normal. So from a 30 to 40% dip, they are now coming back into about 10 to 15% dip. The other thing that happened in the US market was a conscious shift towards nearshoring. Most of these retailers have kept a budget of at least about 5, 7, 10% of their total sourcing. They try to source now from the nearshoring. So these two reasons would be responsible for some amount of glut in the Asia market from the US. So you see, like, you know, if I look at overall, whereas US is still going conservative for Asia, the other markets are coming back to normal. Now, if all the markets fire in the same pace or come back to a normalcy, then we will see, a growth further in India as a whole that we experienced in 2021-22. So that's something I think might take another two seasons, but it is going in that direction.
Yeah, so the Guatemala acquisition that you have done, so that should help solve part of the problem in the US, right?
Yes, see, Guatemala is a new acquisition for us. We have taken a very small unit as you have, we are running only about three production lines, and we are ramping up to 12 production lines. Guatemala is a small country. Compared to the Asia, the kind of factories that we have in India, Bangladesh, or Vietnam, this is a smaller operation. And for us also, it's a new country. As we go in, as we establish ourselves, and then we go. Yes, from the US customers, there's a huge, push initially, and there's a huge attraction for them. In fact, all my US retailers have already visited the Guatemala plant. All of them, I think 50% of them have already placed the confirmed orders. But not to the comparison of our India and Bangladesh or Vietnam numbers that we do out here. But the capacity that we have built up, that we are seeing a good traction out there. And yes, like we will be growing that if as we get more and more hold in the near shore country of Guatemala.
Okay, so there is scope for more expansion than what you have budgeted right now, right?
There are two ways the expansion can happen. One is by direct capex, and then the other one is also by outsourcing. So as you know, that Paul, we do have an expertise of doing both. So we don't do 100% in countries where it allows us, where the the ecosystem exists to do more outsourcing. So we'll capitalize on both. So yes, it's more to come. It's a new start as of now. So we will be going carefully. We'll not make any mistakes. That's the first goal. And then ramp it up, grow it up.
Okay. So just a clarification, you said the revenue potential of that facility is $20 million, right?
Yes, as of now we have planned up to that much.
Okay, and any idea when could we see that coming up in our profits?
See, we have mentioned in the press release that we are expecting post our complete capex is done in the next 2 to 3 years, we should be able to reach to that level.
Okay, and the first year utilization, if you could say something for next year maybe.
So let the first capex will happen. I think we can keep on updating in our quarterly call as the progress happens in Guatemala as to what the capacity utilization we are looking at, because it's also a function of the product mix, customer mix, and acquisition which takes place. We'll keep you updating in that.
Okay. And just one last question regarding the margin. So is the current margin number sustainable?
the margin, which with the combination, the mix of the revenue with that kind of a mix continuing, yes, it is sustainable in that sense. We have given a, in this year of challenges, which Pallav has already mentioned about the conservative, we have initially said in this year we'll be able to maintain the EBITDA margin what we had last year despite all the challenges. We are maintaining that guidance till now. Our endeavor is always to make an improvement on the top of it.
Okay, okay. Thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. A reminder to all participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Rishabh Shah from Global Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. Sir, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on a good set of numbers. So I have two questions. First is, what are our average turnaround times for our current factories in different value chains? If you can give some, like put some light on that.
Average turnaround time of manufacturing?
Yeah, correct.
Sitting on a unit.
A manufacturing. So normally?
So we do seasonal, most of our, in our apparel manufacturing, the orders comes in seasonally. That means, you can say 4 quarters. So each quarter will have, although the quarter time period may not exactly match to the financial quarter that we publish. But yes, 4 times minimum, most of the US customers do place the business. The Europeans try to do it maybe 5 to 6 times in a year. And there are certain fast fashion retailers like the Inditex Group, which has got Bershka and Zara, or like S. Oliver and Mango. So these kind of customers do take more than that. They go up to 8 to 10 cycles of buying as well.
Wonderful.
And for us, we have to produce within that timeline. So depending on the customer, we do have timeline which ranges from 140 days to even as less as 50 days or 40 days also.
What's a blended somewhat if you can?
Blended, you can say best is about anywhere between 4 to 5 in a year.
Understood. Thank you for the detailed answer, sir. The next question is, how is the company planning to reduce its environmental impact? So considering a lot of major apparel retailers have turned to sustainable practices, and what is our company doing to adhere to these stricter ESG norms?
So definitely, we had and always continue to evolve our plans on the sustainability front. So I'm proud to say that today, one of the measures that most of these Western retailers keep track on is, they call it as Higgs Index. So our score in the Higgs Index is much better than the global average of the manufacturers of apparel. So that continues. We continue to invest. Some of our units use solar power. And more are going in that direction. So at various phases, whether it is the sustainable energy or the conservation of water or recycling, most of the water that we use across all our plants, we have STP and ETP where we recycle that water. And that's has been continuing. Yes, to the accuracy of what kind of recycling, whether how less is a discharge, that has been improving every year. In fact, this year we are doing our little bit of investment in the washing units of Bangladesh, where we want to conserve almost about 85% of the water. So those kind of exercises we continue to do, and that's the advantage that we always have from our customers, who appreciate this, and we work very closely with their goals, and in fact help them to achieve their goals by being completely sustainable at our end.
Understood.
I think detail-wise, we should be publishing in our annual reports as we continue to update what we're doing.
Understood. Thank you so much, and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Navneet Baya, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pallav, and congrats for a great set of numbers. I wanted to know what's the revenue split between your large format stores and the higher fashion specialty retailers as of now.
We do have both. In fact, we do supply to the large format retailers. We do supply to the brands, which are national brands in US. And then we have specialty retailers. So we have, you can say that the combination is all three. So example, the large format retailers would be like a Kohl's or a Walmart, that kind of, you know, customers that we have. Those are like large format retailers. Then we have brands like Tommy Hilfiger, Calvin Klein, or Polo Ralph Lauren. These are the brands who have their own retailer, also specialty retail, plus they supply big volumes to all these large retailers. And then the third one is the specialty retailers, like a Gap, Old Navy, or Aritzia, or this kind of brands, like American Eagle. So there's all three combinations are there. Now, in terms of percentage breakout, I would say large retailer would be large format retailer of US and Europe combined should be about 50% of ours.
Okay, and the 50-50 split, roughly.
Yeah, approximately. I may not be 100% correct because these numbers fluctuate season on season. But I think my rough estimate would be about 50%, yes.
Okay, so any progress that we've had as a company over the last 3-6 odd months in terms of developing new high fashion retailers as our customers?
Yes, we continue to do that. We have been at it. So many new customers we have been trying to develop and have developed also in this last couple of years. And that share continues to improve and increase.
Okay, so any specific name that you could call out that you've added maybe in the last 6 months?
Over the last 2 years, if you talk of, then there are players like Chico's, then we have players like, you know, the S. Oliver's or some of the Gary Weber's and other many few others like which you're continuously in discussion with and starting to work with. So there are various brands, like even we have started our own operation as a licensee and branding. So that also has is taking off at this point of time. So there will be like, you know, higher end brands that you'll see more and more. And when I'm talking about large format retailers, I'm talking about the global. When I talk of 50%, it's not only US. So we have in US like people like Macy's and Walmart and the Kohl's. Similarly, we have in Europe, we have the George Asda or the Primark. And in Japan, I have Muji. They're also grocery and some big store, big format store. And same in Australia, like I work with. So you see, like, you know, I have tried to split the risk across the globe. So not only exposure having purely, when I talk of 50% exposure to the large format, it's not in US only.
And so,
if you want to say that, okay, Muji or a Japanese customer can be a specialty retailer because he has dealt like that, that can be done. But yes, either how you want to do the classification, more from the financial point of view or this point of view or from the product, the inventory thing to them.
So I would suspect, you know, last, I think, when you organized the plan this, you mentioned that developing your brand customers is obviously more difficult, but it's more sticky and may offer a better margin for your products as well. So I was just trying to understand from that perspective.
To that. Yeah. So yeah, so there are customers like, you know, Next, there are customers like, you know, the specialty ones, as I mentioned, like Chico's or Aritzia or some of the others, like we are continuously in discussion with and are either we are starting, we have just started, and some of them, like, we have increased our percentage share. So that continues to happen.
So roughly, as you mentioned, the split is about 50-50 right now, roughly.
If you talk of large format store across the globe, yes.
Understood. And in, again, the specialty retailers, how has our progress been in getting to the higher end, brands like maybe, I don't know, I'm just taking an example, like Hugo Boss or Karl Lagerfeld, the ones which are more premium. How has our progress been in
that? See, we do that. We supply to Hugo Boss or Big Brothers and those kind of customers. We are supplying. But their buy and the numbers are smaller. The production runs are smaller. The efficiency goes down. Margins are better. But it's always risky because if you see over these years, like they are much more vulnerable. Like when something happens, like pandemic or anything happens, the vulnerability of these brands is the highest. So that also, like, you know, always we keep a check on that, on their financials and how they are doing.
Understood.
So yes, there is a whole set of, you know, we have our Indonesia plant, which is very, you know, needle is very high, or the some of the customers we have are very high needle. So these are all full of this kind of brands as well. So yes, so we do cater to that. Even in India also, we have started some of these high-end retailers or specialty brands as of now. And so is in Bangladesh. Like we do ship to, we did ship to Everlands and other customers like that at higher end from Bangladesh as well. So that continues, but the percentage would be always smaller because that's how we continue to get. And as me and Sanjay have mentioned repeatedly in this call, like we take pride that in terms of how we manage the business is almost like, you know, 98-99% of our revenues are always insured in terms of either factored or insured. So that tells us the financials of our customers always. So depending on that, like when it is opportune to really grow with those kind of brands, we will do. As of now, we definitely maintain a balance.
Okay, so do you have a target in mind, you know, in the medium term where you would want this company to be, or do you think 50-50 is a good percentage, you know, split to have, or do you think it should go higher in one vertical?
Our business share will be split across the regions, because what I have seen in this last couple of years is that even the region-wise, we see a variety of, you know, the variation in demand. And also the way they are functioning or the risks that they are taking. So I definitely want to split, like as I said, like till last year, after the pandemic, the US share went up so high. We were almost 70% exposure was in US. So definitely this year, like first of all, the balance has to happen between US and the rest of the world. And then comes this kind of format of retailing. And I would always like to have a balance between the large format and the specialty retail and also the brands. Because that's how like you control. Some of the time, like the national brands do really well in US. When the retailers don't want to take their own risk, they would rely on these national brands. And the other time, they would, when their things go fine for them, when their inventory is in control, they really push for their private brands. Then my share in the large format retailers would go up at that point of time. So that's the, those are the variables that we have in our business. And we like to control them as much as possible for our strategy and our benefits or other goals, like I told you, the risk goals that we have.
Understood. Thank you so much for your responses, sir, and all the best for your future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Himanshu Vitani from Nevershire. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir, and congratulations for the good set of numbers. Sir, on the business segments of large fashion stores, large format stores, and high fashion retail, is it possible to give a margin difference between these segments?
No, we don't do that because you see, like, you know, I don't know, like, most of our facilities do multiple brands and multiple segments. So I would like to track the performance of my individual units, manufacturing units, and the individual businesses. That means, like, you know, as Sandy explained earlier, like we have these five regions. So five regions are profit centers. So there will be mix in each one of them, which will be ideal for them. for the particular. So yes, we have an exposure, we have these customers, and ideally, like, I should have a control over how much percentage of the mix would be there within those, so that my profitability goal is there. So you may have one particular customer, let's say, at a very high end where the margins are high, but the volumes would be less and the risk could be high again. So that's something I don't think worth mentioning or going into that kind of detail. Unless until, like, no, I don't know, like, what is the objective of going there? Unless until, I think my first priority would be to make sure that each of my business units or the SBUs are profitable and tracking as per the goal. So that's how we use that.
Got it, yeah.
Sandy, you want to add this?
No, Pallav, you are very right. We are tracking every business-wise profitability at the profit center, and there is always a combination of the flexibility, fungibility, which is lower, and it's always a blended return which we are looking at from the assets which are invested across geographies.
Got it, sir. Does that say, how are the business dynamics between them currently? I'm assuming that large format stores are much more economical, and with high inflation, they must be, better with the demand than compared to the high fashion retail. Am I assuming correctly?
See, large format retailers are definitely, they drive the volume and the turnovers for various companies. So when we do compete with the large format retailers to book our business, then we compete with the biggest of the world. So that means the biggest companies from China or Taiwan or Korea or Vietnam and Bangladesh. So we have to compete with them. So naturally, the competition is high and the margins get, what you call, much more competitive. But when you go for a small retailer, a small high fashion brand, so then the competition is less at that point of time, and they are looking for a particular look or a particular fashion or a particular fabric. So they are very nitpicky. They can be really, like, you know, slow in their decision making and really going, trying to do something different. So it's a mix. So definitely you need both to run effective operation. Or a large scale operation, you need the large retailers also, and for the smaller ones or the specialty ones as well. So that's how we look at it, as these are various levers that we have in our business, which we use to generate the maximum return for our investors and profitability for each of our units.
Well, thank you, Munna.
Does it make sense? Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Pulkit Singhal from Dalmus Capital in Management. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the follow-up. My first question is on margins itself. I mean, we have now done 8.5 to 10% kind of margins in the last 3 quarters. Which honestly, I mean, in certain demand environments, in a low demand environment, where there would be higher competition intensity and you are operating at 60-65% utilization is quite commendable. But whenever the demand revives, and let's say next 2 years, and you scale up the business from 3,000 crores to whatever it be, 4,000-5,000 crores, shouldn't this only go up because of higher utilizations and lower competition intensity, or do you anticipate a scenario where a very significant adverse product mix can also impact it? I'm just trying to see what would be the determinant over the next 2-3 years, and can it easily be into well into double digits margin?
To book it, I think all the conversation that we had, and thank you for asking this probing question. I told you, like, you know, we are trying to create a very healthy business model. It's not skewed to only one or two or customers or one kind of customers or one kind of region or one region. So the business model that we are adopting as Pearl has to be very healthy and robust. And definitely the first objective was to mitigate all kind of risk and then use these levers to maximize both the volume and the profitability. So I think that's the journey that we have undertaken, and that's the kind of, you know, the processes that we are putting across. So yes, if the market opens up, if all the markets are firing at the same rate, then definitely Pearl will have a very good time, I think, with this kind of business model that we have been able to set up, even in the tough conditions.
Right.
That's how I would like to see it.
Understood, yeah. And in terms of the hiring plans, typically, I mean, even if you have to fill in capacity, you have to hire upfront and train upfront before the actual demand comes in with capacity in place. So when if I look at the hiring plan, how has that changed? Are you starting to, because there is a general rate of attrition that anyway happens every quarter. Are you now starting to hire more aggressively or how has your hiring plan changed in the last 3-4 quarters?
Two aspects to it. One is the executives and the decision makers and the middle level and upper level kind of management. So that across all our locations is stable, and we are hiring more and we are continuing to grow because we have a growth plan as we have discussed. So the other part is in the factory, the number of workers that we are. I think that we are quite stable in all locations, apart from here. India as a country has got a high turnover. I think also because most of our factories are also in the region where it's like, you know, the oldest region like Gurgaon or Bangalore and Chennai and all. So where there are a lot of industry is there. So the turnover is high. We are almost having an attrition of, I would say, plus 6% plus this amount of time. So that's giving us also, you know, a benefit when it happens of this kind of slowdown that happens. Then you don't have to retrench people. You just have to wait for 2 months and already have lost 12% of my workforce. Those are the things that we are seeing and observing. In other regions where, if I also look at from economy part or the ecosystem that we have in Vietnam or Bangladesh, like even this town, my subject level, it's in India, like, we have to be very careful and, as I told you repeatedly, like, India is growing at this point of time. Ecosystem is still under development, not as developed as Vietnam and Bangladesh as of yet. So that's why, like, we have to be much more careful in particular. But yes, like, you know, I don't see much of a challenge as of now to ramp up in a short notice.
Okay. And because given that the second half, as you said, I mean, is a better seasonality aspect, this 880-900 crore kind of fund rate that you've done already delivered in Q1, can one expect that to achieve that rate to continue? Or there can be significant changes in that?
As of now, the indications look like it should be in that way, in that direction, unless until something happens globally, something that we can't foresee as of now, but looks like in that direction.
Understood. Lastly, this is the CAPEX. If you can call out what is the CAPEX for this year and where all will that be going, if you can split it up.
So we have a normal budget of CAPEX that continues to grow in terms of upgrading our machinery or upgrading our sustainability effort. One of our facility where we had land, so we are growing, we would be adding things. So those are the things that we have undertaken. So no major CAPEX as of now. We might go for one of these schemes that Indian government is coming up with, but that's still under discussion.
Okay, got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you may press star and one to ask a question. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of our question and answer session. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Pallab Banerjee for closing comments.
Hello.
Yes, Nia. You want to take that?
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. I hope we have been able to answer all your questions satisfactorily. However, should you need any further clarification or would like to know more about the company, please feel free to contact our team or SGA, our investor relations advisor. Thank you once again for taking the time to join us on the call.
Thank you. On behalf of Pearl Global Industries Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.